RadioMD.
RadioMD.com.
Dr. Pam Peek, founder of the Peek Performance Center, and Michelle King Robson, founder of EmpowHer.com, cut through the confusion to discuss all things her. This is Her Radio on RadioMD.
Oh, addicted to distractions. Is that you, Michelle? I'm just saying.
I'm a little distracted right now. Could we talk later?
Wait a minute. You better not be. We're on the radio, for crying out loud.
That's what I mean.
Well, listen, we have a solution. Our go-to Dr. Procrastination solver is Dr. Tim Pitchell. Yes, you know him from his best-selling book, The One I'm Just Saying is the Best. It saved my life. It's called Procrastination, Health, and Well-Being. Oh, we love it. Dr. Tim, welcome back to Her Radio.
Thanks, Pam. Hello, Michelle.
Hello. Oh, hello. We're so happy to have you on today.
Addicted to distraction. Addicted. Okay, so help us. Michelle says that she's addicted to distractions. How can we help her? What's the first step we can take?
Well, it's interesting just to think about being addicted to distraction. I feel the same way, you know, when she said, but you're on the radio. Well, I could be on a conference call and be looking at my email right now, which I am, and I have to bring myself back. And so I think our world is full of really enticing distractions, and we have to recognize that they've been built with that intention, right? That we are becoming addicted to these things, and we have to decide, okay, what's really a distraction? And what's part of my job? Like, I have to answer emails all day, and you probably have to respond to patients, but when does it start to go into entertainment or things that aren't necessary? So the first place to start is start to audit about what is really necessary and what is the stuff that's just amusing myself to death.
Right, which
all
is
right. So
social
what
media,
do you do?
Right?
What can Michelle
wouldn't that
do?
Be one of them, Tim?
Well, for
social
sure,
media?
Social media. If you've got Instagram running there and Facebook, or you name, you take your favorite. If it's running in the background, along with a chat session and your email, you're setting
That's
yourself
you,
up
Michelle.
For failure. What's that?
That's you, Michelle. I mean, I can see all the stuff just whirling away. I mean, there are times, seriously, when she has all her phones and iPads and everything all lined up, and they're all going off at different times. It's just the most amazing thing you've ever seen. So it's hard. You got to turn off the phone. What else can you do?
Turn off the phone.
Well, that's so hard.
Oh, my God. You're going to send me into apoplexy.
Oh, no. She has to go to rehab.
Well, there's some truth in that. I really think we're going to get to that point. I was just asked to review a paper this week for a journal about internet addiction. And the word is being used a great deal, but there's two things we want to think about, and it's how we think about these things. And the first is, you know, when you say you've got something running in the background. It could be just your email, and it is a work-related email, and you're working on something else that you should be getting done, but you say, it will only take me a minute. And there's some truth in that. It will probably only take a minute at least to open that email and see what it's about. But that's a rational decision over an irrationally short period of time, because a minute later you're going to face the same decision. And you know where the story goes. 2 hours later, you're wondering why you're answering emails to your aunt who you haven't talked to in about a year, because you never really made the decision to stop the other task. It'll only take me a minute. It'll only take me a minute. And it just builds and builds, and you end up surfing Netflix for the next few hours or watching YouTube videos of kittens. Like, we all know it. And one of the reasons is this subtle little thing that if you find yourself saying it'll only take a minute, stop right there and know that you're trying to make an excuse for a diversion.
That's so true.
I love it.
So true. And, go ahead.
Yeah. What do you do? How do you change your mindset on this?
How do you think about flip it around? Yeah.
Well, part of it then too is recognizing that, and this is the second point I wanted to make, is that we like to think we're multitaskers, but our brain doesn't work that way. We have to switch tasks. We can only really multitask on things that don't use the same resources. Like, I can chew gum and type at the same time, but I can't read one email. Okay, well, and you know what? We're all going to have our limits. But there are some things we can do at the same time. Most of us can drive and talk to someone in the car, although some of us are dangerously bad at that.
Yeah,
we start looking at them. Yeah, well, it can be, but, you know, we've always done it. But now we're going to kill people texting at the same time, of course.
Right.
But what happens is we task switch. So the first thing I think that helps us change is to realize the myth of multitasking. And people are dying on our highways because of this. And people literally walk into poles because of this. And people disrupt relationships because of it. So you have to remember that you're not really multitasking, you're task switching. And research shows that it takes 10 to 15 minutes to bring your full attention back to the other task. So you have to recognize you are going to pay a price for moving your attention from one thing to another. And then you have to ask yourself, well, why am I doing that? And usually it's because you're trying to escape whatever is at the task at hand. If what you have at hand is really captivating, you're not going to go to what's called a distraction. And that gets us back to that story of procrastination. It's an emotion-focused coping response. So you're trying to cope with some emotion you're having now about something you really don't want to do by doing something that's more fun right now. And once you recognize that, then you might have the motivation to change, and then you'd step up to the idea that, yeah, I have to watch how I think about things. This only takes a minute. It's just the path to disaster.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay, let's integrate reward. So, you know, what you were talking about, a short-term reward, like I want to do something that's more fun and whatever. How do you switch your brain around to say, get the thing done, whatever it is sitting in front of you, and then do a reward? How do you flip your brain on that?
Well, because I think what we do is we say reward or no reward. And actually, there's two flavors of reward. There's that hedonic reward that makes you feel good right now, but there's the eudaimonic reward that comes from success, from being involved in something, from doing things. And so if you can recognize that there's different flavors of reward, and that eudaimonic reward that comes from accomplishing our task, from actually doing things, is actually a much deeper and longer-lasting reward. It actually sticks with you. The hedonic reward is only you feel good for the moment, but actually most of the time it comes back to bite you. You go, yeah, that was fun, but now I got to pay the price, and it's just the opposite. So I think one of the things is to realize that you're setting up the wrong argument saying, well, this is rewarding and that's not. Actually, that has a wickedly good reward, and you have to recognize it as such. So future self is going to feel so much better because future self is going to have that eudaimonic reward, not just this fleeting reward of the moment by watching this cute little video.
So, Tim, a couple things come to mind. I love doing projects, but it's just getting me started. I procrastinate on it, even though I want to do this particular thing. I know it's going to take me a lot of time. But I like things where there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And in my industry, just the emails alone, there is no beginning, middle, or end. And so I need to change that mindset. And what do you think about that? Because that's, if I can check that box, I'm so much happier.
Yeah, what we all are. And life doesn't come like that. And I don't know why we grow up to believe these things. We believe things like I have to be in the mood, I have to feel my motivation has to match the task at hand, or I have to have the right amount of time for something. And that just never exists and it never will exist. It's kind of a part of our self-deception of, wouldn't it be nice if life were different? And so we have to recognize that my inbox is only going to be empty the day that I'm gone, right? That it's always this constant flow of things. And so I think there's a lot of wishful thinking that goes on when we say, well, if only if life were different, if only if my tasks were more beginning, and or beginning, middle, and end. In fact, you would be a very low-skilled person if that was the case. Because actually, I could hire you around my farm.
That's my problem.
Yeah, I could hire you to come and scoop manure.
Yeah,
and
she is not. She's not low scale on this.
No, exactly. That's the whole point. She's in a really complex field. Yeah.
Well, you know what's really important here? I want everyone out there in her radio land to understand how important it is that you see it, that you have to reframe so much of this. We've been talking to Dr. Tim Pitchell. He is our go-to scientist and researcher and expert on all things procrastination. His initial book, Solving the Procrastination Puzzle, A Concise Guide to Strategies for Change, literally changed my life. And his new book, Procrastination, Health and Well-Being, is another absolute go-to. Thank you, Dr. Pitchell, for being on her radio once again. I'm Dr. Pam Peek with Michelle King-Robeson.
And you can get Dr. Pitchell's book on audio, too, which I love. You're listening to her radio on Radio MD. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and if you have a health question, feel free to email us at askher@radiomd.com. Stay well.